3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
House Speaker Mike Johnson splits up aid bills for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan in a bid to push them through Congress once and for all. Plus, China sees strong growth even as more foreign businesses decouple from the world's second largest economy.
The phrase you often hear is China plus one. You don't want to move everything out of China, but you want to make sure you have some degree of redundancy and can keep manufacturing what you need in the event of further disruptions.
And the Justice Department prepares to sue concert promoter Live Nation. It's Tuesday, April 16th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. After months of delays, House Speaker Mike Johnson is planning to hold votes this week on separate bills providing aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. That comes after congressional leaders from both parties and President Biden had urged Johnson to take up a combined $95 billion foreign aid package passed by the Senate earlier this year. However, prospects for that bill had sunk amid Republican pushback on sending more money to Ukraine, while some Democrats had soured on more aid for Israel. Here was Johnson explaining his move last night.
I think the final product will be something that everybody can take confidence in because they got to vote their district and vote their conscience.
Meanwhile, the specter of widening war in the Middle East is putting the prospect of $100 a barrel oil back on the table. Commodities reporter Joe Wallace says that strong demand for jet and shipping fuel, along with Ukrainian attacks on Russian energy infrastructure, are pushing prices close to last year's highs. However, with benchmark global prices now up 23% since mid-December, traders are betting that producers will step in before things heat up too much more.
OPEC plus, you know, the cartel bringing together Saudi Arabia and other OPEC members with Russia and a few other producers has been cutting production for some time now, and it has lots of what is known as spare capacity in the industry. So they could raise production pretty quickly and that would tame any big spike in the price. There is a question as to whether and at what juncture OPEC plus might take that decision. But a lot of analysts think that it could actually happen relatively soon if the price keeps on rising, and to a point at which the cartel gets worried that maybe prices are so high, demand will start to take a knock.
And further pressure could build up under oil prices later this week. That is after the U.S. yesterday signaled that it doesn't plan on renewing measures that removed a broad array of sanctions on Venezuela's oil and gas sector unless President Nicolas Maduro fulfills a range of commitments on holding free and fair elections. Maduro faces a Thursday deadline to prevent the sanctions, which prohibited financial transactions in Venezuela's energy sector, from entering back into force. And China's economy is getting a boost from Beijing's push to turbocharge manufacturing. The 5.3% growth in the first quarter comes as Chinese officials are steering activity and investment toward manufacturing and exports in order to compensate for slow consumer spending and the property market crunch, neither of which show signs of abating. And industrial data suggests the strategy is working, with economists at Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the Asian Development Bank nudging up their forecasts for economic growth in China close to the government's official target of around 5% for the full year. Well, one of the challenges facing the Chinese economy has been the global push by companies and countries to diversify their supply chains away from China, and in some cases, to nearshore manufacturing closer to home. But change of this sort can be slow, complicating efforts to gauge just how fast things are actually changing. Well, a new report from Germany's IFO Institute is shedding some light on how rapidly German businesses are lessening their dependence on China. And I'm joined now by one of the report's authors, Andreas Bauer, as well as by Wall Street Journal reporter Jason Douglas in Singapore. Andreas, take us into this report. What did you find at the top level?
Yeah, so we basically asked two principal questions to German firms. First, are they dependent on inputs from China? And second, what are their plans with respect to imports from China in the future? And interestingly, we asked these questions exactly just days before the Russian attack on the Ukraine already in 2022. And I think there are two main findings. First of all, the share of German manufacturing firms which report that they're dependent on inputs from China has fallen quite substantially. So in 2022, around 46% of German firms reported dependency on China, and this share has fallen by around 9 percentage points now to 37%. So in a sense, we interpret these results as a early signs of de-risking of German firms. And on the other hand, we see a slowing down of de-risking efforts. So in 2022, around 45%, or so around half of all firms, planned to further reduce their imports from China. And this share has also fallen to now around 38%. So in a sense, the report gives a mixed message.
In terms of what businesses said was their reason for doing any of this, did they name any motivating factors?
Yes, we ask firms, why do they want to reduce their imports? And I think there are three basic reasons they frequently cite. Number one is the aim of diversification of supply chains, reducing dependence on China in general. What has become much more important in comparison to 2 years ago is the role of political uncertainty. So now around 70% of firms cite this as a reason why they want to reduce their imports from China. And just before the Russian attack on Ukraine, this has been around 40%. And the third reason is the role of transportation. So back in 2022, freight costs has been a huge issue. This importance has now fallen, but still around half of all firms which want to reduce their imports from China say that the risk of disruptions in transportation is the reason why they have these reduction plans. And you know, when you think about the Houthi rebels' attacks in the Red Sea, etc., this makes total sense.
Jason, you cover Asia economics for us. How does what Andreas has been sketching out compare with what you've been observing far beyond Germany?
I'd say it's pretty familiar. I mean, we've seen companies from the United States, from other parts of Europe, from Japan, all do something similar, right? So they also want to reduce their reliance on China. People like the Bank for International Settlements, for instance, describe a process where supply chains are becoming longer and slightly more complicated. So instead of shipping something from China to the United States, for instance, you might ship a few bits and pieces to Vietnam and do some final assembly there and then ship it to the United States. India and Mexico are other countries that where multinational companies are looking to diversify. The phrase you often hear is China plus one, right? So you don't want to move everything out of China, but you want to make sure you have some degree of redundancy and can keep manufacturing what you need to in the event of further disruptions.
And do you get the sense that this momentum is likely to continue, particularly at the company level?
That is an interesting trend. One factor is cost. So it was easy enough for people to think about moving when interest rates were low. These days, consumer demand is down a little bit and interest rates are much higher. Some companies are certainly looking askance at the cost of doing this. That does hold open the possibility, of course, that they might return to these kind of diversification plans at some future date if they can make the sums work, if you like.
Andreas, is that the expectation you're seeing in Germany, that maybe we've seen some early movers achieve some advantage here, but that, I don't know, the costs of an increasingly more complicated supply chain could dampen enthusiasm for more of this?
Sure. This is part of the answer, and also why we see now this mixed package. For firms for which it has been less costly to move away from China, they've already, according to our survey, done this. But now the further the risking will become more and more difficult because it will be more costly. One interesting finding in our survey is that firms which own production sites in China, so German multinationals, they're really less likely to have plans to reduce imports from China than other firms. So maybe now that the first phase has been relatively easy in terms of cost, but the hard work is coming in the future.
I have been speaking to Andreas Bauer of Germany's IFO Institute, as well as Wall Street Journal reporter Jason Douglas in Singapore. Andreas, Jason, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Coming up, the DOJ prepares to sue Live Nation, the biggest name in concert promotion and ticketing. We've got that story and much more after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
We are exclusively reporting that the Justice Department is preparing to file an antitrust lawsuit against Live Nation in the coming weeks over the concert promoter's size and power in setting ticket prices at the biggest venues in the U.S. Journal reporter Anna Hertenstein says the lawsuit stems from an investigation launched in 2022 looking into Live Nation, which controls more than 80% of the market for primary ticket sales.
And it's all about Live Nation's size and its power in the concert industry. And this investigation gained momentum in November of that year after Ticketmaster crashed during a pre-sale of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour tickets. And so critics are pushing for a breakup of the companies. There's been a couple of reactions. We heard from a spokesperson who said that Ticketmaster has more competition today than it ever has. And a Live Nation employee defended the company recently, saying that the accusations that it's a monopoly are false. He said that Ticketmaster doesn't set prices, that artists and teams do.
Boeing is hitting back at a company engineer who said last week that shortcuts in its aircraft assembly process could lead to the fuselage breaking apart on more than 1,000 planes. That engineer is due to testify in Congress tomorrow. Boeing says those claims are inaccurate and that the issues have previously been raised and addressed. Yesterday, two engineering executives also gave a lengthy media briefing on the company's assembly process, saying the carbon composite skin on its 787 jets is nearly impervious to metal fatigue that can weaken the fuselages. And in other aviation news, the pilots' union at American Airlines is warning about a spike in safety issues at the airline, including fewer routine aircraft inspections and shorter test flights after planes return from major maintenance work. The airline said it is in regular contact with regulators and unions on bolstering their safety record, while the Federal Aviation Administration declined to comment on the union's allegations or whether the agency has increased its oversight of American as a result. And if all these safety concerns are weighing on your vacation plans, let us know. With summer right around the corner, what questions do you have about what all of this means for the future of travel? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send that to us at wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com, or leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and your location, because we might use it on the show. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. Today's show was produced by Daniel Bach and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show, and until then, thanks for listening.